My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for him World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the trembling in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating. The video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They have not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he is still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. Hour number two, and I'm very pleased to welcome to the program our expert on things in the Middle East, Israel in particular, from the Center for Security.
Center
for Security Policy.
It's not that important.
Anyway. Oh, boy. I want to welcome Dr. David Wormser to the program. Dr. Wormser, welcome. Good to have you with me.
It's always great to be with you, Pastor.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, there's been a great deal that has happened in Israel since we last spoke, and you've been keeping me updated with regards to it. But I thought it might be a good idea to bring you onto the program to share with us directly, you know, what you're seeing and what's happening over there, and really, I guess, the implications behind it.
Sure. Well, there's everything's proceeding apace. We did have last week the defense minister of Israel go to Greece, and he said that Iran is within reach of five bombs. They have enough material for five bombs, not one. So it's clear that Iran is trying to cross the threshold of an arsenal, not just a device. That's number one, which tells you two things. One is, if they're working on enough for five bombs, and they want to try to cross the threshold, if you're trying to develop a bomb, you will first try to take what you've got and detonate it and work it through. The only reason why you would store enough material like this and not proceed immediately on the weaponization part of it is because you've probably already finished the weaponization part. And I think this is where their interactions with North Korea over the years and missile work that they've done and all the work that they were doing that the IAEA and other organizations discovered, but never did anything about and were brushed under the rug by the Obama administration and sort of the slate wiped clean, despite anything.
Now let me jump in and ask just for clarifying purposes. So when you say that they have developed the weapon, what you're saying is that they have taken the uranium and they have weaponized it. They've upgraded it to weapon grade, and they have created, if they've weaponized it, they have created essentially a warhead itself explain that, please.
What I'm saying is they have created the weapon without the uranium put in it. In other words, for most countries, they have to do extensive testing of high explosives, of weapons design with non-uranium stuff.
Okay.
A non-nuclear warhead testing.
Okay.
And then they put in the uranium and then test that. And then they go and they start producing an arsenal once they know they have a working device.
Okay.
What you're seeing with the Iranians is that they apparently have proceeded all the way to designing this weapon and are confident it will work, and probably because it's the same and probably shared work with North Korea and others. And all they need to do now is to produce enough uranium and put it in the bomb, and they've got an arsenal of weapons, not one. So they don't have a nuclear weapon yet because they haven't put the uranium into the weapon. But they're getting to what we call a threshold state, which means it's all in place. It's all there. They just have to decide literally to turn the screwdrivers, attach it, put it in, they're done.
And to be clear on that, because we've talked about this in years past, and another mutual friend of ours and I have had conversations about this as well. There's every indication that for some time now, Iran has had nuclear ready or nuclear grade. They call it enriching, right? Enriching the uranium.
Yeah. We know that there's a couple data points here. One is we know that there were traces of 87%. Enriched uranium that the IAEA discovered in an inspection a few months back.
Okay.
90% is weapons grade, 87% is awful close. If you're getting that high, you basically are going for 90, and it's just that might have been the residue left.
Right.
That's number one. Number two, to get from 0% to 3% enrichment, is the bulk of the work. To get from 3% to 18 or 20% enrichment is a much smaller amount of work.
Okay.
And to get from 20% to 90%, which is when it's bomb grade, is negligible practically. In other words, almost all the effort to get to bomb grade is to get to 20%. And then what, taking it from 20 to 90%, it's not, you know, four times as
right.
much, four and a half times as much enrichment. It's already very easy at that point. We know they have enough uranium stockpiled now to 60%, which means within days they can transform that into 90%. And we know if they can get to 60, they can get to 90. And we also know they did with the 87% traces that we found. So essentially they are within days and weeks, a couple weeks of an arsenal, not just a bomb.
And really when they're blustering about, you know, war and going to war and being at war and standing behind these attacks and working behind the scenes to quell issues with Saudi Arabia and come into some kind of truce there. All of this is a precursor to really a full-on assault on Israel.
I would imagine it is, yes. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of problems that happen here. First of all, the United States, our position has collapsed. You're old enough, I'm old enough to remember in the 70s there was a movie with Michael York and Feldman called The Last Remake of Beau Jest, and it starts with... It's a comedy about and they drew a red line and the guy steps over the red line. Well, if you don't like that red line, I'll draw this red line. The guy steps over, draw a third red line, he steps over it.
Yeah.
Well, that's American policy right now toward Iran's nuclear program. So what's happened is over the last month, the United States basically said, okay, we understand you've blown through all these limits that were even under this very weak nuclear deal that Obama signed, you've blown it all away and you've gone way beyond those limits. But we're willing to accept you as a threshold state, namely in the terms they meant, which we know that you may produce enough uranium and so forth, but as long as you don't do any moves toward taking that uranium and crossing the threshold to 90% from 60%, in other words, as long as you stay 2 or 3 weeks away, then we'll live with that. Now we've withdrawn even from that red line. And the latest rhetoric from the administration is we will not accept Iran's production of a device. Well, that means we'll accept everything up to the production of the device. We won't accept them actually creating a bomb. But once they have a bomb and they've created it, what are we going to do exactly? Then they've crossed the threshold. In other words, we've now eliminated any red line short of their actually detonating a device. And so the Israelis are in a bad place because they want to prevent Iran from getting a bomb.
Right.
They want to strike if it gets to the red line that they can't accept. The problem is now that the Iranians are getting so close, they're within 2 weeks essentially, in some ways, they're getting so close that they can decide to go to that. The Israelis would have to decide to act, but it's within 2 weeks that Iran, and the timing is now set by Iran.
Right.
If Iran had 6 months or a year still to get a bomb, then and they crossed a red line, then the Iranians don't know if the Israelis will strike this week, next week, in a month, 3 months, 4 months, and you can't maintain a state of alert that long. You lose focus at certain points. So what they've done by this is they've pushed the Israelis to the point where if they strike, they have to strike when Iran expects it. And that's
sure.
That's a huge strategic problem for the Israelis.
Sure.
As well.
They have no element of surprise. There's no element of guesswork whatsoever. It basically becomes it's like watching a football game. And you know the quarterback's going to take the sneak and he's going to try to get through. So what do? You pile everybody up over the center, and you dare them. They've got to be strong enough to be able to push you across the line. But in this particular case, that becomes a gigantic challenge.
It does. So what's happened here is essentially, I really don't know any other way to describe it. The United States has reconciled to Iran becoming a nuclear power. Moreover, not only is it reconciled, but it's been cooperating with it, essentially. Not technologically, it hasn't given Iran this stuff, but it has been working to water down the sanctions. We keep talking about lifting sanctions on Iran. Nobody needs to lift sanctions anymore.
Right.
Over the last 2 years, the amount of oil production that Iran has exported to other countries is now at the pre-sanction level. In other words, the sanctions aren't being enforced. Iran is getting hundreds of billions of dollars a year in revenue from this. They were a country on the verge of bankruptcy with less than $4 billion in foreign reserves when Trump left office. They were about to go under.
Yeah, well, not anymore.
No, now they're actually becoming very wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful, using all that wet money for every nefarious purpose you could imagine.
And who is the Sunni power in that region? Saudi Arabia?
Well, that's
I mean, militarily, because militarily, Saudi Arabia doesn't have a military. I mean, they're not.
Well, that's it.
They've been dependent on us. I mean, that's why we had the arrangement we had with them. So,
exactly. Saudi Arabia is only a quarter of the size.
And so at one time, it was Iraq, right, with Saddam Hussein. We wiped that out, so that doesn't exist any longer. You've kind of got the remnants of an ISIS, so to speak. But the world has turned and referred to them as the bad guys. And I'm not saying, folks, that they're not the bad guys. But the problem is that you've got two elements in that Arab world. You've got the Shiites and you've got the Sunnis. And when we... created a scenario whereby they were kind of fighting each other and there was a balance of power between the two, that was in the best interest of the whole world. Now you don't have that. Let's take a quick break, and I want to kind of dive into that for a minute because I think that's important for people to understand. All right, I got to minimize this screen. There we go. And hour number two, there we go. First commercial break, here we go.
So up next, we have Clan Slate. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. Clean Slate is a formula that's made from a natural orthosilic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your Clean Slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your Clean Slate today.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king size regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen, or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Did you know you can do your tithing and love offering right from your computer? Visit www.chosengenerationradio.com to support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation. Now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. My special guest is Dr. David Wormser, Center for Security Policy, and we're talking about Israel. So, where did we leave off?
Sunni-Shiite.
Huh?
Sunni-Shiite.
Yeah, okay, so we got the Sunni-Shiite situation going on, and we used to have a balance with Saddam Hussein in Iraq, with Gaddafi he was in Syria? Libya.
Gaddafi was Libya, but Saddam was.
But Saddam was really the major player there.
Yeah,
I know there's been a lot of debate about the weapons of mass destruction. I've had a number of individuals on the program over the course of the years talking about the chemical weapons, and that really is the weapons we were talking about, and those chemical weapons were moved out of Iraq into Syria and then back into Syria. So there was a game that was played, folks. When the inspectors went to Iraq, the weapons were moved to Syria. When the inspectors went into Syria, the weapons were moved back to Iraq. I understand everybody, we never found weapons of mass destruction. You know, that was all, neocons and so on. I get it. And looking at, we'll talk about it right now, because looking at what has happened now relative to destroying and creating this imbalance that now exists, it's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, the Iraq war is a very complex thing, and it is difficult to really get one's hands on, because it was done so badly. I mean, and I was in that administration, and I was in the Bush administration, and it was executed badly, and the way even the conception of the war was done was not right. So there's an immense amount of criticism. It is one of the big foreign policy flubs that America's undertaken. That said, we have to remember that Iraq back then, we keep looking at it and saying there was no arsenal. Well, there was no arsenal. That's true. But the arguments at the time were not that there was no arsenal, but that the sanctions were crumbling because the international community was losing faith in sanctions and losing will to continue to restrain Saddam, exactly like they're doing with Iran right now. They're losing will to really restrain the country. So what happened was we were facing a situation where you could have a breakout in Iraq and still have the same Iran problem we have now. And then we have to start talking about this nuclear program versus that nuclear program. Should
right.
we? It was a mess. The second thing, too, is I think the Sunni Shiite thing is key. Iraq was a Sunni government that was a bulwark to some extent against the Shiite encroachment in what's called the Fertile Crescent. The Fertile Crescent goes from Iran across Iraq to Syria to Lebanon to Israel. It once was fertile before the Islamic conquest, but it's mostly desert now. But one shouldn't let the desert upset. That's a geographic area.
Okay.
That was broken up by the Sunni government of Iraq. The problem was that they were having a collapse of their control over the north. The south they could only control by killing 250,000 people every few years, using gas, et cetera, both north and south. I mean, this was a man who killed probably 500,000 of his own people through gas. So, and it was clear that he had his sights set on Saudi Arabia, on Jordan, on Kuwait, again, on the whole area of the peninsula, and ultimately also Israel, and north toward Iraq, so Turkey. So this was not a stable circumstance. The question was, you know, the Shiites are divided. One has to remember that this government in Iran is actually a revolutionary government in Shiism.
Okay.
They took Shiism, which had been a small minority across the region, and began to think like a small minority, which is kind of apolitical. Yes, there's going to be the coming of the Mahdi. They have this disappeared Mahdi for 1,300 years.
Right.
My feeling is that he'll come and he'll do all the right things, and he will bring finally justice for the Shiites.
Okay.
But there was the traditional Shiism is, yeah, eventually, one day. And until then, we just keep our heads low, et cetera. Comes the Iranian regime, which is Shiite, in power, and they basically come up with this idea of a Shiite dictatorship that is a theological rule of the jurisprudent, where you have the legal structure of Sharia and the judges in Sharia ruling the country. Which is, by the way, a good example of the problem when you let judges rule. I mean, I love our Supreme Court, but what's so great about a conservative Supreme Court is that they're inherently self-restrained, which is why I always worry about a very liberal Supreme Court, because
right.
they're inherently activist. But anyway, you see the problem of a very activist and empowered Supreme Court in Iran. Is it's a rule of the jurisprudent of the legal of the, it's a legal tyranny essentially of Sharia. But at any rate, the point is this was a revolution within Shiism. So the whole idea in Iraq was, since the real core of Shiism ultimately was in Iraq, if you liberate them, you turn the Iraqi Shiites against the Iranian government, and you have put a dagger in their heart.
Okay.
That was the strategic idea.
Interesting.
The problem with that was the British government under the Labour Party, Tony Blair, and his people, which are very much like our Foreign Service officers, they did not understand a lot about Shiism, and they thought, oh, the way to control the Shiites in Iraq, we're in Iraq, we've got to control the Shiites in Iraq to stop from killing us. The way to control the Iraqi Shiites and have them stop killing us is to make a deal with Iran. So they became dead set on a deal with Iran to deliver us quiet in Iraq. The Iranians were laughing like they're laughing today about any
right.
diplomatic deal.
Right.
They were killing us. They were waging war against us using Syria, the tribes from Syria. They were basically in a vice crushing us in Iraq and killing our soldiers.
Right.
And the first thing the Iranians did was kill off the traditional Shiite leadership. Ayatollah Khomeini, Ayatollah Hakim, they killed them off.
Right.
Because they did not want a challenge from traditional Shiism. They wanted their revolutionary Shiism. And we became agents of that by thinking that if we give the Shiites to Iran, that they'll then be so happy that they'll stop attacking us in Iraq. Of course, what we did is we brought Iran in through that, rather than use the Iraqi Shiites as a dagger into Iran. So that was one of the many, many strategic failures that were in effect.
Well, and that really plays into the argument that people have, you know, made, because the other thing that we tried to do was is we tried to create a democracy in Iraq with a people who had no concept of democracy, who didn't believe in nor really want a democracy. Democracy was never something that they envisioned for themselves. They wanted a religious authoritarian. I want to say autocracy. I don't know, something along that. But you know, theocracy. They wanted they really were more inclined to embrace a theocracy than a democracy, and that's what they have ultimately embraced, is a form of theocracy.
Mm-hmm. And remember, Islam has two gods, essentially. It has two pillars.
Right.
One is their form of religion, Sharia, etc. But then it's tribal law. Tribal law has weight, equal weight, in fact, in Islam. So when you look at a country like Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Jordan, Libya, these are not countries like we understand them.
Right.
We keep thinking and imagining we're dealing with a European country. They're not. They are basically one tribe or one sect of the country managed to establish its power over the others, and that causes immense tension.
Well, or in the case of you know, the situation, what was it in Afghanistan? You know, it's three or four different, you know, it's the northern tribes and the southern tribe. I mean, what was it that they did? They killed the lion of, what was his name? They referred to him as
Northern League. Yeah, huh? Masood or something.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they assassinated the leader of the northern tribes. And mm-hmm. and that was kind of the, that was the signal for the launch of 9/11. But they had to take him out because he was actually working with the United States to quell some of this, and kind of was carving out an area where they were going to create this buffer zone.
Exactly.
And so they needed to, so they killed him to send a signal to the rest of the area that, hey, we're the new guys in charge. And then they had to make a big splash in the United States in order to really make that message and bring that message home. And absolutely. And we may look at it and say, I mean, and it was terrible. Over 3,000 people died. And this idea that it was all, you know, planned by our government, I will agree with you that our government had a role in it. There's no question our government had a role in it because we created the scenario. We created the entire problem. And yes, there may well have been some bombs that were pre-planned or underneath the tower or whatever. There were definitely witnesses that heard explosions underneath the building in addition to the plane that hit the building. But that doesn't take away from the fact that this was an attack on the United States and that its purpose was to send a message to the tribes in the Middle East and say, hey, we're the new kings on the block, and the United, you know, those who partner with the United States of America, those that partner with the great Satan, this will be your end. This is what's going to happen to you. And it threw everything into turmoil, and that turmoil continues. Let me take a break. We'll be back. We're going to talk more, folks. These are critical issues for us to understand, and we can to understand them even from a prophetic end times. Because remember what Scripture talks about the armies coming down from what would be China and Russia, and literally through Iran in spilling into the Middle East. And we're looking, that scenario, what David and I are talking about today, is the setup. That scenario is being set up right before our eyes. We'll talk about it more coming up right after this brief break. Let me find that spot here. All right, here we go, folks.
So up next, we have CleanSlate. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. And CleanSlate is a formula that's made from a natural ortho-silic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts, which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your Clean Slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your Clean Slate today.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king size regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen, or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear, even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for in World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
You can support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation by visiting www.chosengenerationradio.com. And now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
Back on here. And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topics off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. My special guest is David Wormser, Dr. David Wormser, Center for Security Policy. We're talking about the Middle East, and I was giving you kind of just an overview regarding that tribal issue. And, you know, there's a film, and it's the story of the Something Strong.
12 Strong.
12 Strong. 12 yeah, Strong.
Great movie. Great
yeah,
movie.
Yeah.
And an accurate movie.
That's what I understood. That's what I had understood in my research of it, that 12 Strong was actually quite accurate. But it speaks to what you were just telling me about regarding our soldiers and their resiliency and their ability to be able to, you know, really figure out on the ground who the who was and what the what was and why people felt the way that they felt and why these generals behaved the way that they did. And man, it made all the difference in the world.
You know, I got to tell you, the Americans are very proud of the American soldier, and they should be, but they have no idea how proud they should be. when you look at, for example, take Washington, where you have people with PhDs and expertise in the Middle East and have spent their whole lives working on it, do not get the Middle East. You took our soldiers. Yeah. You took them from Texas, from Montana. They don't have a PhD from Harvard in Middle East studies. And we threw them in the middle of the Middle East. We threw them in Afghanistan, Iraq, right. Syria, et cetera. And I got to tell you, those guys figured out almost immediately what the situation was. They figured out that this was not a nation, but tribes. They figured out who they need to talk to. They navigated it. I have never in my life seen a more flexible and smart group of people manage their situation and figure out the right path to victory. And that movie, 12 Strong, I think is one of the best examples of it, is that you had, a few officers thrown in the middle of Afghanistan, and they were basically told when they started asking questions, well, who do we talk to? What do we do about transportation, logistics, et cetera? The answer they got was, we'll figure it out. And they did. So here you had a bunch of soldiers that were thrown into the Middle East and Iraq and so forth. I can't tell you how much our victories in Afghanistan, and by the way, our victory in Iraq, I mean, people forget by 2007, before the Obama administration took over, we had essentially won in Iraq. There was almost no fighting left. There was almost nobody getting killed. The terrorism had more or less ended. We had essentially won, and this is a tribute to our soldiers. I even know one of them who he's a Syrian. He was born in Syria, came to the United States, joined the American military, deep patriot, was sent back to Iraq, helped us. He was in our military intelligence. He figured out how to navigate the tribes. He was really on the guy who convinced our generals how to fight in Western Iraq to finally win and defeat Al-Qaeda there. And that, so we had these great soldiers. The problem is that in Washington, it all got messed up.
Yeah.
And they kept thinking in terms of their old theories and ideas and what they learned in school, and it didn't really fit. So, and then finally you had the progressives take over under President Obama, and they were so anti-American that they wanted us to get out of Iraq ignobly. They wanted to take away the hard-won victory of our soldiers on the ground and reverse it, essentially, by just leaving precipitously. Same way they did in Afghanistan.
And by doing so, number one, they gave our enemies the ability to wage war against us. And then they took the allies who we had worked so very hard not to agree with in all terms, but to at least suggest that, okay, we're going to let you, you know, do what you need to do in your world. And we're going to be here. We're going to kind of step away, but we're going to be here if you need us. And we created this kind of semi-comfortable relational situation. And then you have a new administration that comes in and absolutely obliterates that, breaks every promise, breaks every, you know. It's the same argument that I think is made to some degree when you're talking about, you know, the breaking of treaties with Native Americans and you know, where you have and this, you know, the challenge, of course, that you have is that when you have a new our governmental system is arranged in such a way that there's not a monarchy, there is a republic. And if we don't do our jobs as citizenry, then we end up with these kinds of issues because we put the wrong people, and the wrong people end up in leadership.
The wrong people end up in leadership, but the second, and what's wrong about them often is that they treat our enemies better than our allies.
Well, they change sides. The problem is that they change sides.
And so what you have in Iraq, for example, at the end of 2007-08, Iraqis themselves knew who the power was and what America will do to its enemies. The Saudis knew it. The Israelis knew it. The Turks knew it. The Iranians knew it. So there were strong limits to their behavior. They were scared, and they had to operate with a degree of fear. Come the Obama administration, and they come and they basically want to say their attitude was, and it was laid out in a speech in Cairo early in the Obama administration, literally within months. It was one of the first big foreign policy statements, which is our enemies have to understand that they're not our enemies and that we don't want to be their enemies and that we understand we're the ones who are guilty for making you hate us. So we're going to go your way. We're going to appease you. We're going to try to bring you around. And what that did is it took Iraq and it made our allies abandoned and our enemies emboldened. And within 2-3 years, Iraq became the playground for Iran. And it became the playground for the resurrected Al-Qaeda in the form of ISIS. And it became the playground for Syria. And it became the play. And then the Turks stepped in because they had their interests. And then the Saudis and...
Well, and to clarify,
it's a microcosm of what's now happening is everybody's running for cover because we don't understand who our enemies are.
I think there's a deeper root to this in two forms. One is that, you know, we forgot the reality that the basis of their culture, the foundation of their belief system is totalitarian in its nature. And so they, you know, if they follow that, you know, we think about them as, oh, those are the radicals. Well, they're not the radicals. They're just like, you know, the Jewish people that read the Torah.
Yeah,
and then, you know, and they live out, right? They live out orthodoxy. Okay. They're like the Christians that live out the Bible. Now, the difference is that in Judaism and in Christianity, there is a love of your neighbor. There is a peaceful ability to live together because our books don't say, go kill the infidel. Their book does.
Yeah. You see, there is a fundamental, one of the big myths propounded out there is the myth of the Abrahamic faiths. Of course, there are similarities.
They're not Abrahamic.
You know, it's like me and Stalin both breathed air. That doesn't make us the same thing. You know, at the end of the day, it's the differences that kind of define you. And what the differences are is that in Islam, the community and the values of the community are wedded to political power, are wedded to a totalitarian caliph,
right,
who then has control morally, politically, socially, completely over everything.
It's just,
it's
described as RPM. So they start out as religious. They present, they mask it, and they say, oh, we're a peaceful religion. And then once they've got enough of them in there and they've got you kind of softened up, then they move to the political. And then the final phase is the military, basically where the people that you were living next to, that you thought were your friends and your kids all grew up together, they knock on your door one day and they say, at midnight, you better leave, because if you're here when we get up in the morning, we're going to kill you. And I'm not making up a story. I'm telling you, I've talked to people who lived in those Middle East countries that lived next to Muslims whose kids grew up. They had sleepovers. They did all of that kind of stuff. And literally that was the knock they got on their door when the Islamists decided to take over. I want to throw one more thing in really quick and then I'll pass it right back to you. America over the last 20 years has completely upended its identity. And that is a big part of this problem. The problem is that America lost her identity. She doesn't know who she is. This isn't even just a matter of policy. This is literally a matter of Obama came in and changed the identity of America. And honestly, David, I would suggest that it actually started when Bush stood up after 9/11 with the Islamists, with the very people that had just attacked us, and said, these are good people. No problem here. That was to the Islamic world. What we have to understand is that was the president of the United States of America surrendering to Islam and saying, yes, America is now subjugated and you need to come over here and take us over.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of mistakes done in those first days. I mean, the running around the country and hiding. And then I think one of the worst mistakes by the president was to say, you know, Americans, go back, do your business. We'll take care of it in D.C. Whenever a government in Washington says we'll take care of it for you, run for cover. Because anything that's big that America has to do, the American people have to be invested in. And, you know, we were just attacked, 3,000 people dead. This was an American wound. And as a nation, we should have been involved instead of let Washington handle it. So the whole messaging and running around the country and the hiding, we should have had the president fly immediately back to the White House and basically say, I am here. Don't you dare come for me. And if you do, yep, you're going to pay.
Absolutely.
That's number one. Number two, what goes on in Islam is not our problem. It's their problem. All we have to ask is, you treat us, you act externally this way. You act as a community this way, wonderful relations. If you can't get your act in order, then we will have to take measures to make sure that we're protected.
Yep.
But we're not Muslims, and we're not going to tell the Muslims how to run their lives, but we are going to defend our interests and our values and our safety and our security. And hopefully the Muslim world will realize that a certain path doesn't work very well for them, and they will internally then shift.
And our interests in the Middle East really are predicated on those that align with our ideals. We should have been defending the Armenian Christians as an example, and we didn't. And we need to be standing with Israel, and we're not. And we need to be standing with the conservative side of Israel, which you and I have talked extensively about that. We've got about 7 minutes. We can go into a little bit of that. But we need to be standing with the conservative side of Israel. And unfortunately, we have a very progressive, and golly, well, let me go to here. I watched a replay last night of the coronation. I think it was a replay, a coronation of King Charles III on ABC. And I about threw up in my bed just watching them, pawn over, DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and ESG, which is the equity, social, and environmental, social, and governance, and just how, look how inclusive he was, and he's a climate changer, and all, I mean, just all of this nonsense was sickening.
And also this reduction of the peerage and so forth. Yeah, there was a lot of stuff like that. I don't really understand why. The whole point of the monarchy is to tie Britain to its past, to its traditions. Mm-hmm. Provide the British with, they don't have a constitution. So for them, the monarchy is the symbol of national unity. But if you start making the monarchy woke and more, it's essentially making it political. And then you're losing people. You're losing it. It should be the symbol of national unity, not the symbol of national political correctness, and not the symbol of national wokeness. And that's what binds the Brits together. So I'm very worried when the monarchy believes that, look, we see it with the Anglican Church, unfortunately, is it's so woke that it's lost any purpose.
Yeah.
And now it's losing purpose. It loses membership. It's precipitously collapsing.
Well,
so the monarchy is not separate from this.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and there were some beautiful moments in there regarding, you know, the prayers, you know, that were prayed and the honoring of the Lord and you know, the beautiful picture of the Last Supper and the continual, you know, turning to Christ and saying, you know, you're the one who is ordaining this king. We give honor to the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords and you know, which was very, very powerful. And then to listen to these announcers just going on and on, and the Meghan and Harry thing, which is absolutely, you know, that their whole deal is just an absolute destruction on traditional values.
Why is King Arthur so important in British lore? It's because he's the one who Christianized Britain. He's the one who wedded the monarchy to Christianity ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
The monarchy is a Christian institution. You can't extract that and leave it
right
as anything. And again, it goes back to this. You mentioned totalitarianism in Islam. There's a book that needs to be written about the origins of totalitarianism, modern totalitarianism. Mm. Personally, I think that it came to the West through two routes from Islam. One was directly from the influence of Islam, because the way that the first 100 years worked out in Islam, it became essentially a pure totalitarian state. And that influenced European politics directly. You could see it when the conquistadors took back southern Spain from the Muslims. They absorbed a lot of their politics, and you saw the popes, the really more totalitarian popes were the ones that came from Spain, and essentially the Spanification of the Naples aristocracy and the popes that came from around there. So you really do see the influence that way. But then you see the second one, which is this philosopher Rousseau that the left so worships because he's the father in many ways of the French Revolution. So worshipped Islam. He thought it was the most perfect form of politics.
Crazy.
Because it wedded the spiritual of God, of the community, of faith, of values, with an enlightened despot, the caliph. And so political power was all vested, not only political power, political, moral, social, religious, every single form of power and human existence was vested in this enlightened despot, this he called it the enlightened lawgiver. And then you see that's the vanguard elite that you see in communism. That's where communism comes from. All the various totalitarian secular religions come from that.
Right.
Man as God. And that is ultimately the problem here again.
Well, the Tower of Babel and original sin, you know, did God really say, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, man then was convinced to attempt to attain the power and the position of God, tempted by Satan to make that, you know, move. And we see how that's worked out. Not so good. All right, final seconds. We're gonna run out of time here. Final thought. About 30 seconds, David.
Yeah, I mean, the Tower of Babel to me is one of the favorite ones. We've talked about this before, but the whole idea that it had to be built out of brick. So the first thing that the enlightened despot had to do is to homogenize all the pieces that made up the tower so that you eliminate any individual uniqueness of any brick. Whereas Joshua's altar was made out of unhewn stones, which were God's creation, and you can't change it. So you have to build the altar on the basis of the stones. Right. Not that the Israelites couldn't have done bricks. They did quite a few in Egypt. But this was to be worshiping God, you have to maintain the individualism that God created.
Amen. Amen. All right, we're out of time. Hour number three coming up straight ahead. I'll be back with more right after this brief break.
Excellent.